My name's Catlin, and I'm one of the pastors here, and it's so great to be with you this morning. I hope you're having a good weekend. I was at the P&E last night. It was incredible. I don't know, was anyone else at the P&E last night? Okay, yeah, I mean, there's no reason to go there. I mean, it's not that great anyway, so it's fine. I hope you are having a good weekend, though. I don't know if you've ever had a bad weekend. A weekend that, you know, all week you're so excited about, right? Like it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday, it's Thursday, and you're just like, like you're counting down for the weekend, and you're getting the crew together, you're getting the plans together, you're texting, and it's coming together, and you're like, I can't wait for the weekend. It is going to be phenomenal. It's absolutely going to be incredible. You have plans with your friends, you got plans with your spouse, with your partner, with whoever, and you're just counting down. Obviously, the plans were not to go to the P&E, though. So wherever you're going on your weekend, you're getting excited. And you have all this anticipation for one of the best weekends of your life. The weekend comes, and the weekend does not end up the way you predicted it. And you go into work on Monday. You go back to school on Monday, walking into your Monday with some guilt and some shame. The weekend didn't go the way you anticipated it. The weekend that had so much hope for you turned out to be a weekend that you thought that date you were going on was going to be so fantastic, turned out to be a really horrible Saturday night, or that time that you're trying to remember your weekend. You know what I'm talking about? Hey, can you believe you did that? I don't know what I did, right? And all of a sudden we go into Monday with this overwhelming emotion of guilt and of shame, and that incredible weekend that you were anticipating all week long was not what you hoped it was, nor what you predicted it to be. You know, Peter had a weekend like this. Peter's this disciple of Jesus. He's one of the 12, and he spends 3 years with Jesus. And Peter has a weekend like this where all week long he's anticipating the weekend. Right, so he's with the other 13, right? Because when we count Jesus, there's 13. So he's with the 12 and Peter 13. So there they are, and they're anticipating this great weekend. They're going to go to Jerusalem. So Jesus is like, hey, we're going to go to Jerusalem for the festival of Passover, and Peter's like, oh, let's go. We're going to the city, and so Peter's getting excited about this trip. So they get the guys together. Here's all the disciples. They're all together, and they start to make their way to Jerusalem to celebrate this event, this Passover, this festival, and the guys are on their way, and they're talking, and here's Peter, right? Peter's chatting to the guys, and here's Bartholomew. You didn't even know that name, but he's a disciple, so there's Bartholomew, and Peter's with Bartholomew, and they just walking and making their pilgrimage to the festival, and they're like, oh my gosh, the feast is going to be unbelievable. I can't wait to see. You think Sarah will be there? And then Peter's like, I think the Lord's called me to celibacy. I she could be there, but it doesn't really matter, does it? And they're making their way to the city, anticipating what should be the most incredible weekend. And Peter's excited. They go every year. Every Hebrew man would make and woman would make their pilgrimage to this festival. So they're on their way, and here they come. And as they approach the city, there it is. There's the city lights. There's Jerusalem. There's the big city. And they're getting so excited. Then there's this moment when they arrive into Jerusalem. Peter's getting more and more excited for what should be the best weekend. And as they arrive, here's this crowd saying Hosanna, and they're laying down all these palm branches in front of Jesus as Jesus makes his triumphal entry into the city. And you ever been in that moment where you're with someone and you're just happy to be seen with them, right? Like when me and Ken Shigematsu go out, I'm just happy to be with him, right? Like there's moments people are like, you know him? I'm like, yeah, right? And I just love being seen with him. So I'm happy. He always gets the attention. I'm just like, as long as I'm seen with you, right? Like I always want to be right beside him. I'm like, I'm with him, right? And just so you know, I call him Big Shiggy. Feel free to use that anytime. And that's Peter's moment right now, right? Like Peter's coming into Jerusalem. He's with Jesus, one of the most famous individuals at that time. He is trending. He is trending. This is going to be the best weekend. Some even might say this weekend's about to get lit. I would not use that word, but some may. And they're making their way in. Here's Jesus. He's received. And here's Peter. That's my boy. That's my friend. That's my rabbi. That's my teacher. That's my everything. That's my Messiah. This would be the best weekend. And it's starting out grand. Look at this. Look at this reception we have received. They make their way that night. It's Friday night. And they're having dinner. And Jesus, once again, prophetically is speaking into the events that will come. They don't know prophetically it's that night. And they're sharing this meal, and Jesus says, this meal we're eating represents something greater. And so he starts to talk about the bread and the wine and what this represents. And the guy's like, yeah, right. We've heard of this. The prophets of old have foretold of this. You've told us about it. They don't know it's tonight. Peter doesn't realize his weekend's about to turn out the way in which he didn't predict. That night, they're supposed to be praying. They're in this garden called the Garden of Gethsemane. They're not really praying. They're kind of sleeping. We all do that, right? We're trying to pray, and then we just sleep, right? So they're doing the same thing. You can't blame them. You've done it. So they're trying to pray, and Jesus comes. And then there's this moment where everything in the narrative is going to pivot for Peter. Judas arrives. He's one of the disciples. He's one of Jesus' boys. 3 years they spent together every day. He's not alone, though. He arrives with a mob. He arrives with the guards, with the soldiers who have come to arrest Jesus. And Peter, being Peter, we love Peter. We'll get to that. But he draws his sword to defend Jesus. Jesus says, Peter, put your sword away. My kingdom's not built on that. Remember, that's why we love Peter. Peter's always just kind of missing it. But he's like, oh, okay. Thought I was your boy. But, right? And he's arrested, and he's dragged into city center. He's dragged into the heart of Jerusalem for his trial. And in this moment of his trial, false accusations, false testimonies are coming. And Peter, being Jesus' boy, follows in pursuit. So Peter makes his way to the city center. And there he is. He approaches, but he can't get into the room where Jesus is on trial and being accused to say, hey, no, I've been there. Those lies, those are lies, and those are not true. He can't get in there, so he's in the courtyard. And in the courtyard, he's recognized. Hey, aren't you one of Jesus' disciples? Aren't you his boy? And remember, this is Peter who, when on arrival, was like, yeah, I'm with him. This same Peter is like, I don't know him. Peter, why would you abandon and reject and disown Jesus in his greatest moment of need? Three times, and Jesus knew this would happen. He predicted it. Three times Peter does this. Then there's this moment Jesus is dragged out from his so-called trial. It's a death sentence. He's dragged out. He's been mocked. He's been beat up. He's been spit on, and he's tossed to the ground. And in this moment, Peter's still on scene. Jesus is kneeling down in this position of submission. But he's not submitting to the authority of man. He's actually submitting to the authority of the Father. It's another preach for another time. In this moment that Jesus is on his knees, he looks up and he locks eyes with Peter. And he's looking up, and Peter looks into his eyes, knowing that I have just disowned, rejected, and abandoned my friend, my king, and my Messiah. They lock eyes. And Jesus looks up into Peter's eyes, and nothing is said except for Peter, this overwhelming sense and emotion of shame and guilt. That what I've just done to my friend. He's so overwhelmed that he can't look into the eyes of Jesus anymore. So he looks away and he runs away, overcome by his shame and his guilt. I can't even look at him for what I've done. And so he leaves the scene and he takes off. As we know, Jesus would be taken away. He would die on the cross, but he would be resurrected 3 days later. After his resurrection, we get to this moment in John 21. It's after the resurrection, but before the ascension, when Jesus would go to heaven. And we're in this moment. Jesus has done what he said he would do. And we get to this moment in John 21. And John is the last gospel book. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We get to John. John 21. 21 is the last chapter. And the story we're going to go into today is the last story. It's the last story of the last chapter of the last gospel that tells me something has to be important. It's the last thing Jesus wants to leave us with. So Jesus, what do you want to say? It has to be important. And we get to this moment in John 21. And it says this. It says, afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Peter said. We'll go with you. So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you caught any fish?" "No," they yelled back. So he said, "Throw your nets on the other side of the boat and you will find some." When they did this, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. This is kind of like one of those deja vu moments, right? Because when Jesus first encounters Peter at the beginning of the Gospels, Peter is fishing, not catching anything. So we're having this like deja vu moment. It's happening again, which tips off one of the disciples. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." It's Jesus. As soon as Peter heard him say this, "It's the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off and jumped in the water. Because that makes sense, Peter. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. I just get this image that Peter's so excited that he jumps and he starts swimming. The other guys are just like sailing by, like, "I don't know why. Like, why are you doing that?" Right? Like, it's faster in the boat, right? This is why we love Peter so much. You're just like, "Peter, why?" Where are we? When they landed, they saw a fire burning of coals with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have caught." So Peter climbed back into the boat. See, Peter, if you would have just stayed in the boat, you wouldn't have to get back in, right? It's like he gets back in the boat to get the fish. There was 153, but even with so many fish, the net did not tear. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast with me." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" For they knew it was Jesus. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he had been resurrected or raised from the dead. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He answered, "Yes, you know that I love you. Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you that when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." I don't know if you're taking notes this morning, but if you are, can you write this down? It's okay to be human. Peter is probably one of my favorite characters, personalities, personas in the Bible. He's one of my favorite, and I know he's many people's favorite. He's probably one of the most preached about characters in the Bible besides Jesus and Paul, maybe David. People love Peter. I personally like Peter because he allows me to embrace a little bit more of my humanity. The fact that I don't have it all together, the fact that you don't have it all together. Because we see in Peter this trait in him, right? And we love him. This is why we write songs about Peter. You know that song Ocean that we just killed, right? We just played every Sunday for like a year, and then people just like hate it now. So that song Oceans is about Peter getting out of the boat, right? Lead me, right? I'm not going to sing it for you. But we love him, and we love him because of just he allows us to embrace it, because there's these moments in Peter's narrative of his life that he gets it and then he doesn't get it. And sometimes it's actually like in the same moment. Like he's getting it and then right, like, no, you don't get it actually. Moments like he gets out of the boat to follow Jesus, right? Like there's a storm and he's in the boat and he's like, "Yes, it's Jesus, I'm going for it." And it's like, "Yeah, you get it." And he gets out of the boat, he's like, "No, I'm sinking." It's like, "You don't get it." Right? Or when he goes to defend Jesus, right? When he's arrested, he's like, "Yeah, I get it. I want to defend Jesus. Like, that's my boy." He draws it and she's like, "No, you've somehow missed it. My kingdom's not built on this." Or that moment when Jesus goes to Peter and says to Peter, "Peter, on you, I'm going to build my church." Peter's like, "Yes, I get it." And then all of a sudden, sometime later, Jesus says to him, you've missed it. Get behind me, Satan. And Peter's narrative allows me to embrace my humanity in the sense, like, it's okay that we don't always have it together. Because here's Peter's story of he gets it and then he doesn't get it. Isn't that our story sometimes? Like, you ever look at those people that you just think, man, their faith is unbelievable. Their relationship with Jesus is incredible. And we look at them and then we're like, we can't, there's no way, right? Like, there's no way I can do that. There's no way. Sure, I admire it. Sure, I look up to it. Sure, it inspires me, but I can never attain it. But then we look at Peter. It's like, okay, I think I can do that, right? I think I can meet up with where Peter's at. Because we know, even in the midst of his getting it, not getting it narrative, that when we get to the very next book, we flip the page, we get into the book of Acts, that Peter was used to do unbelievable things, supernatural things, incredible things. And it's like, whoa, Jesus, you would use Peter. Why not use the disciple who loved you that recognized you from the boat? He seems to somehow get it. He seems to have somehow figured it out. And here's Peter. And somehow in our culture, we've got to this place where we have said to ourselves, to be used, I have to get it together. When in this narrative, I see Peter who sometimes gets it and lots of times doesn't get it. But we see that he just says, Lord, I love you. Peter, do you love me? Lord, I love you. I'm going to use you to do incredible things. And so it allows me, and I hope it allows you to be like, you know what? It's okay to be human, that we don't always have it together. And yet, Jesus wants to work through you to use you to do amazing and incredible things. It's okay to be human. Then we get to this point in the narrative where the disciples have arrived on shore. Here's Jesus. He's cooking breakfast, and he just wants to have a meal with them. Isn't that an incredible picture? He just wants to sit with them, and they arrive, and I wonder what was going through the disciples' minds. I'm sure the other disciples were all like, yeah, man, this is exciting. This is incredible. We're going to have breakfast with Jesus. He did what he said he was going to do. It is accomplished, and the victory has come, and we're going to have breakfast, and it's going to be incredible. And then there's Peter, and I'm sure there's a part of Peter that's pretty excited. I'm sure there's a part of Peter that is really happy to be having breakfast with Jesus. But we also know just a couple weekends ago, Peter had a really bad weekend. And I wonder when he sits down to have this breakfast, what is going through Peter's mind and what the conversation is. You know, if I was one of the disciples, I'd be like, Jesus, what did you do for 3 days? Like, what happened? What went down in there, right? Like, what was that like? Like, what was the conversation for them? And then there's this moment where Jesus looks at Peter. And he says, Peter, look at me. And in my mind, I picture it like, here they are, they're sitting on the shore. The tide is kind of hitting the sand, and there's the disciples, and maybe there's other people fishing. But then there's this moment where Jesus just looks at Peter, Peter, look at me. And it's only now Peter and Jesus, Jesus and Peter. It's like the other disciples, the other fishermen, the sounds of the lake, everything disappears, and it's just one-on-one. It's just them. That, you know, this is what I love about Jesus, that amongst the masses, he sees the individual. He sees the person. He sees Peter. He's like, Peter, I just want to talk to you. And it's like Jesus just forgets about everyone else in there. He's like, Peter, look at me. And I wonder what's going through Peter's mind, because what's waiting on his heart is this emotion of guilt and this emotion of shame that happened on his really bad weekend. The weekend that he thought was going to be fantastic and incredible and amazing turned out to be a horrific weekend. That's heavy on him. I wonder if you've ever been there in your life, where in your story there is moments and seasons where you have been so overwhelmed by your grief and your shame. And maybe it's because of something that happened in your life, a decision, a mistake, something that took place. Maybe it's something that happened to you. Somebody took something from you. And yet you're the one with this emotion of guilt and shame. Like maybe it was because I did something. Maybe it's because I was giving off some sort of signal. Things happened to me. And so you're living with guilt and shame. Maybe it's because you grew up in a family that used shame. Maybe it's because your history, maybe you're here this morning, it's your first time in a setting like this in a long, long time, because your story with Jesus, your story with the church has been one where they used shame and guilt. Maybe you come from a family or a culture that is driven by shame. And so you're like Peter, you're sitting here, and you're like, what is Jesus going to say to me? Peter, look at me. What are you going to say to me? And maybe going through his head, I'd imagine if I was in his shoes, maybe that's what I'm thinking, that Jesus might say something like, why would you abandon me and leave me in the greatest moment of my need? Why would you do that? What, Peter, what was going through your head? Were you so concerned about your own safety or your own reputation that you would abandon me and reject me and disown me? And you would look in my eyes and run away from me and leave me there? That's what I would imagine. Like, I would imagine Jesus would not want to inquire, but we know that this is not what he asks him. Instead, all Jesus asks him three times is, do you love me? It's interesting that he would ask him three times, paralleling the three denials. Almost like Peter, I know what you did. In fact, I knew what you were going to do. I predicted it. I told you were going to do this. So in one hand, he's recognizing, and on one hand, he's saying, I see what you've done. But I don't want to talk about that. All I want to know is that you understand I love you, but do you love me? Three times he asked me, yeah, Lord, I love you. I love you. And in this moment, Jesus finds Peter in his shame and his guilt. Do you love me? And what I love is that he doesn't rehash out the past. Right? Like Peter, you need to rewrite your wrongs. Because what's amazing is if we believe that Jesus is the author and perfecter of our faith, and if he is the author, then he's already rewritten the story. That we don't need to rewrite our wrongs. You know, some of us, we're so caught up in our past, and we're allowing our past to dictate our future. But what's amazing about this moment is that Jesus doesn't linger on Peter's past because Peter's past is paid for. Can I say that again? We got to get excited about good news like this, that Jesus doesn't sit and linger. Peter, this is everything you did wrong. In fact, he just says, do you love me? And he doesn't need to rehash out, revisit, live in, dwell in the past because the past is paid for. Why waste our time? Why waste my energy? Why waste my voice when I already paid for it all? It's done. But there's so many of us that when we're living in our past, we're allowing our past to dictate our future. It's like this, life is linear. We have to only move one way. But I'm so focused on my past, trying to rewrite my wrongs, trying to fix it on my own good deeds. But rather, it's paid for, and I just need to move on and look towards my future and my calling and my purposes. That your past does not bind you. If you have a relationship with Jesus, you have been set free. That your past is no longer your authority. That you have been set free. Because it's paid for. It's done. You know, and then we get this moment where it's like, okay, the past is paid for, but Peter, I don't think you can do what you were going to do. The callings that were on your life are no longer. No. What's amazing when something gets paid for is that Peter didn't forfeit his future. Peter didn't forfeit his future. Because in this scenario, he says, do you love me? That's all Jesus cares about. Like, at the end of the day, it's not about doing. We care too much about doing. We put our energies into doing. It's not about doing. It's about relationship. And he says, do you love me? Peter three times, yeah, Lord, you know I love you. Okay, then feed my sheep. And what Jesus is doing is he's calling back into Peter's life purposes and plans. That Peter did not forfeit his future because of his mistakes. That his shame and his guilt that he's living in has not somehow erased the plans that were for his life. That there's some of us, we feel like because of the mistakes we've made in our life, the things that have been done to us, the things that have made up our story, we've somehow forfeited our future. That the dreams I had, the plans I had are no longer because of the mistakes I've made. I'm not even worthy enough to do that. I don't even deserve to be part of those things or do those things. You know what Jesus says? Jesus says, I paid for it all. And I promise you a purpose and a plan for your life and for your future because your past is paid for. And so Peter has not forfeited his future. Even though on one hand, my human side says he deserves it. Peter, I can't believe what you would do in that moment, that you would abandon him. That there's a part of me that's like, he deserves it. But what it is that he has shown an incredible amount of grace. You know, grace isn't just a concept. Grace is a person. And in the person of Jesus, he has shown a limitless amount of grace. Enough grace to cover his future and enough grace to cover his past. You know, it's like, I don't know if your parents keep a keepsake box for you. right? With all your stuff from when you were like a kid and a teenager and stuff, or you're keeping one for your kid and you put like trophies in there and ribbons in there and good report cards in there. So I was on the phone with my mom the other day and I called and I was being real smart butt. And I'm saying, Mom, like, I'm like such a good person now. I'm like pretty incredible, right? And my mom's like, you know, son, so I'm just in Calgary. You know, son, I still have your keepsake box. I'm like, amazing. She's like, yeah, the only thing I could put in there to keep was all your suspension letters. So I don't think you're such a good person. And I was like, okay, humbled, right? Humbled. Okay, I'm not such a great person. I'm working on it. Jesus is working on it. But it reminded me when she said that of this story when I was in grade 8. And it is true. I had a number of suspensions in a row. I am your pastor to your students, by the way. But it's fine. It's fine. I'm in grade 8, and I'm in Mrs. Cadry's class. Mrs. Cadry was this real petite, short lady. And I don't recall what I was doing, but I was for sure being a jerk again. And I was doing something where she gets to this point in her emotions and her bandwidth where she's just like, that's it. You're done. Mrs. Cadry, I'm sorry. She's like, nope. She's like, come on, we're out of here. She's like, I don't want you in my classroom now or for the rest of the year. So I'm like, oh gosh, is this more than a suspension? So now I'm freaking out. But you're trying to save face. You're like, yeah. But really you're like, holy crap, right? And you're just like, I'm actually more afraid about what's going to happen when I get home than I am like at school. I'm like, okay, well, I'm actually more afraid from when I get home, right? So we're on our way to the principal's office, and she's fuming. She takes me a back route, and you could cut through the library, and there's like a secret door that would take you almost right into the principal's like direct office. Like it was like the express route. I was like, oh, we're going express. Okay, you are mad, and so. We're going express route, but we have to cut through the library. She says, son, sit down. Yes, ma'am. Because now I'm like good behavior because I'm trying to redeem any redeemable relationship that's left with Mrs. Cadry. Bless her heart. So I sit down and she's like, son, sit down. I sit down with Mrs. Cadry and she's like, you know, son, she's like, the way you're acting, the mannerisms you have, the people you're hanging out with, you're better than that. What's really interesting is it was the first time in my life that anyone spoke truth into my life. Up until that, it was like trying to earn whatever it is that you're trying to earn. And it was the first time someone sat down and said, your potential is more. The purposes for your life are greater. Now, mind you, I'm a pretty strong atheist at this point in my life. I'm not a Christian, but she's speaking purposes and plans and truths into my life. And she's like, you need to stop hanging around with that crew you're hanging around with. What was amazing in that moment, it was the first time I can remember experiencing that level of grace and forgiveness. And I feel like in this moment, Peter is getting that level and beyond of grace in his life. Peter, I've seen what you did to me. I remember that bad weekend. We locked eyes. I know the shame and the guilt you're living with, but I'm going to call out purposes in your life. I'm going to call out plans in your life. You have not forfeited anything. I've paid for your past. And Jesus starts to give to him this new beginning. In fact, in this moment, what's happening is he's being reinstated, reconciled, and redeemed. He's reinstated into leadership. He's reconciled in his relationship to Jesus, and he's redeemed. We might even say he's being rehabilitated. And it's this amazing moment of grace in his life that he didn't have to earn. There was no doing to earn it. It was just grace, this free gift that he could receive. There was no, I need to do this. I need to rewrite it. I need to rewrite my wrongs. There was nothing for him to do other than when Jesus says, do you love me? What's your response, Peter? I love you. Then you have it all. You don't need to earn it. Isn't that amazing? You don't have to earn it. You don't have to work for it. You don't have to do enough. Like he could have gone to Peter, care for the elderly more. Like care about social justice more. Show up to more rallies. Like do more things. Tithe more. But instead he's like, you don't have to do anything because all that matters is our relationship. Right? Like Peter's motivation isn't his moralism. It's his relationship and his love for Jesus. And then we get, and if I can close with this, we get to this moment in the narrative where Jesus says to Peter at the end of all this, like, do you love me? Yeah, I love you. He's like, follow me, which is really interesting because it parallels when they first met. They met on this shore. He had been fishing. He calls to Peter. He says, Peter, follow me. And in this paralleling moment, in this last chapter of this last story, of this last gospel, he says, Peter, everything is forgiven. This is who I am. I am grace. I am forgiveness. If you love me, then just follow me. And it's this moment where he doesn't receive what was due to him. He gets a fresh start, and Jesus looks at him and says, follow me. And I feel like in our own lives, can we get to a place where no matter where our shame, where our guilt is coming from, no matter how long we felt like we have been lost in that season, in that moment in our life, in our own narrative, no matter how long we've been too busy looking on our past, that all Jesus has to say to you is not even going to rewrite that, but rather, you already know I love you. I've gave it all for you. If you can just grasp that, and all he asks is like, do you love me? And if we can get to a place where we say, yes, Lord, I love you, then the only appropriate response to that is, follow me. Yes, Lord, I love you. Yes, Lord, I'll follow you. And I don't know in your narrative, in your story, where you have been living in guilt and you have been living in shame. But I am saying that the only freedom you have, the only way to refocus your attention onto your future, because it is not forfeited, is Jesus. Your counselor, can I be this boy? Your counselor may assist you, right? Your psychiatrist may assist you, but your only freedom is in Jesus. No other person can bring you that freedom except Jesus. No other person can promise and fulfill the promises except Jesus. So wherever you are in your narrative, in your story, if you're living in guilt or if you're living in shame, whatever your story is, I believe what Jesus asked Peter is prophetic in the sense that it transcends time. And I believe Jesus is asking us this morning, do you love me and will you follow me? And I wonder if in our own story, in our own life, we can get to a place where we say, yes, Lord, I love you. Yes, Lord, I'll follow you. Can I pray for you? Team, you guys can come back. Jesus, we thank you for your incredible, free, all-sufficient grace that covers my sin, it covers my shame, it covers my guilt, whether my guilt was self-induced, whether it was because someone else, whether it was because of family, whether it was because of culture, that God, you have set us free. And I'm just praying, Father, for those that are in this room right now that are just living in guilt and in shame. God, I'm praying that you would just set people free this morning. That this journey that I've been so tied to my past, I've been trying to earn and fix the past, I pray that we would be set free knowing the past is paid for and that our future is glorious. That the plans, the purposes, the agendas, the things you have for us in our future are so incredible. And we don't need to live in the past, though it is part of our story and it's now part of the narrative, it's now part of the testimony. And so Jesus, would you set us free? Would you find us on the shores of our narrative and our life? And say, sit down, have a meal with me, look at me. Do you love me? Yes. Lord, I love you. Then you have been set free. Amen.